This week on the Nittany Dispatch, we discuss Penn State's latest transfer portal additions and Nick Saban leaving Alabama and what that could mean for Penn State. This week on the Nittany Dispatch. Hello and welcome to the Nittany Dispatch. I am John Sauber of the Center Daily Times. She is Audrey Snyder of The Athletic. And Audrey, it has, like, it just doesn't end, does it? It legitimately never ends.
John, I think top of this episode, we needed to start off by prefacing everything we're about to say with today, we're recording Thursday, marks James Franklin's 11th anniversary since he got hired at Penn State and introduced as head coach. So 11 years. I've been here every day, every step of the way. It's definitely felt like 11 years to me. That was the intro presser with all of the, I'm a Pennsylvania boy with a Penn State heart. That's when he volunteered to blow up balloons at kids' birthday parties. And then I think he quickly realized that this wasn't Vanderbilt and he did not need to do all those things here. So happy 11-year anniversary with Penn State and James Franklin, which feels like a good place to kind of start off with the latest, the latest development here, which is obviously Nick Saban's seemingly abrupt retirement at Alabama. That was the biggest story in sports right now, came out Wednesday night. John, what was your initial reaction to that? Because mine, I was sitting down, I just thought I had finished work for the day, and I saw it on Twitter, and I was like, whoa. Like one of those stop everything, all hands on deck moments.
Yeah, so it's funny. First, before we go get too far, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. Leave us those 5-star ratings there. That's always very helpful. Leave a review. And if you're watching on YouTube, hit that like button down below and hit that subscribe button. It's very helpful to us and we really appreciate it. But I was actually, so Penn State played Northwestern men's basketball last night. And I pulled into that back lot behind like the BJC where my parking spot is to go into the media entrance. And I'm sitting there probably for like a minute and a half listening to the end of a podcast. And I see a friend of ours, Daniel Gallen, also pulling. I was like, all right, I'll just sit in here and wait until he gets out of his car. We'll walk in together. And because he saw me when he waved when he pulled in. And so I'm sitting there listening to this podcast. I'm like doing one last scroll through Twitter. And I see Chris Lowe has tweeted that Nick Saban has retired. And my first reaction was click the Twitter profile, check the follower count, check because the verified thing isn't there anymore for reasons that we don't need to discuss that would last hours. It's no longer there, so you have to double check. And I realized it really was Chris Lowe, who's very connected, especially in the South and in the SEC country and everything. And Daniel had walked up to my car at that moment. And I opened the door and I was like, Nick Saban just retired. He's like, oh, really? And I went in and I sit around the court like before the game. And like I told a few people that were with the Penn State men's basketball program this, and they were all like stunned. Like I was like, yeah, did you not see this? And it was just shocking. Right. Like it was like you said, it felt like it was out of nowhere. It felt like Nick Saban feels like at least Nick Saban is still at the height of his power, so to speak. And easily could have won a national title this year if a few things go differently, and easily could have won one next year with his elite quarterback return.
And I think, you know, you talk about fan bases that maybe get spoiled by success, right? And that's what Alabama has become. I think it's also important to remember that that's not what they were, that there was, you know, that shift that had to take place. And that is all credit to Nick Saban. But obviously, we're a Penn State football podcast, so I'm sure our listeners are thinking, well, what the heck does this mean for us, if anything? And I'm sure, well, maybe not. It might not mean anything. Ultimately, we'll see. But right away, you know, you see the lists of names that get floated as potential candidates. My initial reaction to seeing James Franklin's name on Pete Thamel's list at first, I was like, oh, that seems like a reach to me. Again, because partially maybe in my head, I had just written a mailbag in which someone on The Athletic, one of our subscribers, had asked me, you know, is it fair to expect more from James Franklin at this point, that they were tired of the 10-2 seasons and after the Peach Bowl that they'd kind of soured on everything here. So that was kind of front and center in my brain. And then you see the best job in college football come open and you see James Franklin's name being floated on a list, which, again, to be very clear for our listeners, a lot of times when these lists happen, these are agents essentially doing their job, right? They're the ones oftentimes floating names, these types of things. So we see James Franklin's name on that list. I know a lot of people laughed at it at first. I thought it was off base. Again, it still might be. But the thing where this gets interesting is what's the ripple effect here, right? Because we saw on Thursday, Dan Lanning, Oregon's head coach, released what I thought was a tremendous video. I thought
it was really good.
Oregon social media absolutely crushed it with this video. It's Dan Lanning in a team meeting. If you didn't see it, check it out. But it said something along the lines of, you know, like, I'm not going anywhere, but like,
if you're worried about your coach leaving, come play for us or something along those lines. Yes. The Ducks aren't going anywhere and neither am I or something. You know what I mean? That's
and at the end, he's smoking a cigar. Like, it's just, you know.
Yeah. So, and that's after the reporting. There was some clearly erroneous reporting last night that he was in Tuscaloosa. He posted a photo of his location at that time, which I thought was very funny, that he was still in Eugene. Yeah. And Matt Zenitz of 24/7 Sports, excuse me, reported that he was watching a Bourne movie, I believe,
that's the real alarming part here that I think we need to worry about Dan Lanning if he's watching a Bourne movie. But
yeah, a lot of stuff on TV, man. Just change the channel. But no, I do think you're right. The cascading effect is going to be interesting. I also, like you, my initial reaction was, okay, this is not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And you start to think about the type of coaches that Alabama would target. Right. It's the names that everyone has seen. It's Dan Lanning. It's Mike Norvell. It's Steve Sarkisian. It's Lane Kiffin, potentially, which I'd have a hard time seeing.
Ooh,
it's Kalen DeBoer. Right. And it's James Franklin. Right. Like, these are they're going to hire a top 12 coach in college football. And they're going to probably, outside of Lanning, it seems.
And you didn't mention Kirby Smart.
I didn't. Listen, I'm not in a place of knowing this for certain, with 100% certainty. Kirby Smart's at his alma mater. He's crushing it. Frankly, they're ahead of Bama at this point. I don't see a reason for him to take the Alabama job. Maybe he would really just want to succeed Saban, and that's that. But I have a hard time envisioning that one. Frankly, that's also the case with Steve Sarkisian, who I think you can make the argument, and I would, that Texas is a better job than Alabama. We saw how quickly Sarkisian turned it around there. And he's got a unified front from what it looks like on all ends. James talks a lot about alignment. It seems like they have that at Texas. I think people forget, and I was very young when all this was happening, but how much infighting there was at Alabama before Saban got there, right? Like, the booster situation was not all that different from a school like Auburn, which we saw how that went recently too.
Kudos to the Auburn celebration yesterday.
Yeah, that was very funny.
That was one of the first things I thought about. I said, man, what a great day for Auburn fans. But I wanted to add to your point on Sarkisian. Quinn Ewers announced Thursday that he is coming back. So again, the sport is crazy, as we all know, but I'd be stunned if Ewers made that decision not knowing what Sark planned to do.
And, you know, we've been stunned before, but I do think, like, that one doesn't line up as much to me. Mm-hmm. Kalen DeBoer could make some sense. Norvell makes some sense. And frankly, James makes some sense, right? Like, I think they're all, I would probably put DeBoer a tier ahead of Franklin, just because I would have confidence that you would have an elite offense no matter what under Kalen DeBoer. But I think they're all relatively close to each other in stature and in accomplishments outside of DeBoer. Like, DeBoer has this past year, right? That sets him apart from those other guys. And even Norvell does too, from Franklin. But at the end of the day, Norvell didn't make the playoff. Franklin didn't make the playoff, right? Like, it was, and there was, they both have years where they argued that they could have. James is being 7 years ago, of course. But I do think, like, he is in that tier of coaches, and want to be careful about how I phrase this. I would be pretty surprised if Alabama did come calling, if it weren't actionable and if it weren't actioned, I should say, right? Like, I just think that is the kind of job that, for that tier of head coach, maybe if you're Dan Lanning and Kirby Smart and Steve Sarkisian at those schools, you can say cut no. Lanning has unlimited NIL funding from the sounds of it, right? Like, it sounds like Oregon is rolling in it.
They're printing money out there, right?
Yeah.
Printing that Nike money, essentially.
Alabama is Alabama. Texas is Texas. Penn State fans, don't hate me for saying this. Those programs are cut above Penn State right now. It just is what it is. And I do think that if you're a coach at Penn State, you're a coach at Washington, you're a coach at Florida State, you can look at that job and view it as a clear step up, one that, like, Frankly, any of those three guys, I would bet they'd win a national title within the first like 3 or 4 years there, right? No matter who it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's a place that at this point, because of where Saban, is leaving this program, right now it recruits itself, right? You have that, you mentioned the boosters, the alignment. You are clearly in one of the Power Two conferences, which again, if you're Mike Norvell, Florida State right now, you say, okay, well, you're not in the SEC, you're not in the Big Ten, so what happens to you long term? Now, they've got a path to the playoff, right? The 12-team expanded playoff is going to help a lot of teams, Penn State being one of them. Florida State certainly figures to be another. But to me, again, you mentioned the ripple effect is, okay, whoever takes that Bama job, say if it's not a James Franklin, right? What about the other job that opens up? Is that appealing enough to him? And I don't know. I mean, this is, we're kind of just thinking through this like a lot of people are right now, because this is like that Bama job coming up. That is that marquee job that is absolutely life-changing for someone, whoever's going to get that job. But yeah, to me, it is interesting too. James Franklin, his buyout right here in the year 2024 drops from $6 million to $2 million. So again, which is pocket change for us. This is a huge deal. We're not, we're never coming up with $2 million. But for a head coach, that is nothing. So I think it's worth mentioning that, but yeah, I don't know, John, I don't know where this transpires, but I'm also curious kind of what the timeline is, how quickly Alabama makes a hire, how close they play this to the vest, because you have presumably your top candidate in Dan Lanning coming out Thursday saying he's staying at Oregon. So how quickly are they moving through that list? I don't know, but this is going to be fascinating for just fans of the sport in general. We'll see whether or not it impacts our day-to-day jobs with Penn State or not. I still think it's a little bit too early to say on that front. But absolutely intriguing, and something else we're going to have to monitor here probably.
Yeah, and I think that's a good way to phrase it, right? Something that we're monitoring. Nothing that I think you and I are like diving in, calling sources frequently on, like, hey, what's the update on this? I think it's far from being that.
We're not tracking planes, to be clear. Yeah. We're not there yet. We're not at the flight tracking stage.
And what we've seen from Alabama's athletic director, Greg Byrne, in the past, like when they hired Nate Oates as men's basketball coach, it was like out of nowhere. And so this is, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if the moment everyone finds out, as Byrne put in his tweet, is when he says it, because that can be how these things go sometimes. So I think that, like everyone listening to this, we are kind of just watching and waiting on some level, you know, making an occasional phone call just to check in on stuff. But I think mostly just watching and waiting to see how this plays out. And I think, like you said, it's the ripple effect, because what people are forgetting is that Jim Harbaugh is also probably going to be a candidate for a few NFL jobs, and Michigan could come open. I think that one might have a quicker resolution. We'll see. Yeah. You never know which way those are going to go. But yeah, this, the coaching carousel revamping on January 10th,
11th,
in the most aggressive way. Well, yesterday on the 10th, revamping, like in the most aggressive way possible is, not something that I had planned for. And, you know, I'm here to watch on some level, just like the rest of us.
Yeah. And I love, I've written a few stories about coaching searches, and I did one about the search that brought James Franklin to Penn State. I did one last winter about Cale Sanderson and how Penn State nearly botched that hiring, which is a wild what if. There are a couple things I've learned from reporting on those types of stories. One is that the lengths which with athletic departments and people on these search committees will go through to keep stuff secret is absolutely crazy.
Yes.
I had someone on a search committee once tell me that they expected media would be camped outside of, you know, football buildings, like hotels, all these places around campus. So they actually met, like, the person on the committee who was basically like a professor. They met at this guy's house, and he's like, here I am around my kitchen table. We are meeting with this top-notch candidate. Just surreal. There's also stuff too, where if they are going into hotels or they're going into conference rooms in hotels that they'll reserve, they will reserve them under a different name. They will sign in for different names of candidates at hotels, so the receptionist doesn't know, or people, that type of thing. One of the great anecdotes I got for the story I wrote last winter about Cale Sanderson's hiring, somebody said Sanderson actually came in bit of a disguise, like had a trench coat and a hat on. So nice. If anybody did see him, cause he was at Iowa State at the time, obviously very recognizable figure, But if anyone saw him, they didn't want to know that it was him. So I'm very curious kind of what lengths Alabama is going through right now to maybe probably do some of these things, because you don't want this to come out. I do know James Franklin, when he was at Vanderbilt before he took the Penn State job, Vandy's bowl game was really late in the season that year. It was like late in bowl season, which they were not thrilled about. And I remember Brent Pry telling me at the time that I reported that story a few years ago that they were all sitting at the team hotel getting ready to go into like a meeting, and they see across the bottom line that James is a candidate at Texas. And then they're all like, wait, what? Like, what's going on? Obviously, then Texas didn't materialize, and he ultimately becomes Penn State's head coach. But yeah, it's going to be a lot of dominoes that fall here in the sport. You've got Michigan having their parade on Saturday, and then I guess we will see how quickly Jim Harbaugh probably gets out of town after that. So again, that impact.
And we also have – this is all happening right now. Like you know what I mean? Stuff can be breaking.
Is there more breaking news?
Mike Norvell did send his commitment tweet out for someone, and people are like quote tweeting it and everything.
For like a player, you mean?
Yeah, for getting a commitment from a player about their 2024 class. I think some people are latching onto that a little bit. But I've covered two men's basketball searches, right? When Penn State hired Micah Shrewsbury and when they hired Mike Rhodes. I like to think that I'm pretty plugged in with these types of things, and that, you know, I am pretty aware of what's going on. And I think you kind of knew where it was going, probably within a week of it happening. So I think, you know, different places handle it differently. I do think like the secrecy is a little, not absurd, but like unnecessary, right? Like the mass secrecy, like making sure no one hears anything from the school side of things, because it doesn't matter as much for them. It matters more for the candidate, which I totally understand. But from my experience, the last two times I've had to work in those environments, like it hasn't been the case here, at least, right? That it's been that secret. So if Alabama handles it that way, I will be very impressed. One, because everyone is watching this. Everyone is trying to get information. You know, people are calling. I'm sure people that are on the Alabama beat are working like 24/7 right now. National writers are working constantly to try and break this. Everyone wants this story. They don't want to be the one that gets it. And so I will be curious to see, you know, how well they do with keeping that veil of secrecy up. Because like I said, with men's basketball, you know, with Shrewsbury,
compare Alabama to Penn State men's basketball.
I'm not saying there's similar from a program standpoint, but just like with that search, like you knew probably like a couple weeks in advance. And with Mike Rhodes, I think I knew probably a week and a half in advance that's the direction it was trending, right? Like you can get a good sense for it. So now it's been reported that Byrne wants it done in 72 hours, and we are officially 48 hours into, or 24 hours into that. Excuse me, we have 48 left. So if that happens, good for him. That is tough.
Well, the other part too, and there, you know, you've got the 30-day window now with Alabama's signees, right? That they can transfer anywhere. So that's going to be interesting too, because you've got some of the best prospects in the country now, essentially trying to figure out if they're going to stay at Alabama. So for them, you want to shore up that hire as quick as you can. To try and, you know, solidify and keep that class intact. But I don't know if they're going to be able to do that. We already saw on Wednesday night, one of their five-star receivers had decommitted. So, you know, there's that stuff to monitor, which I don't think anything from that front would necessarily impact Penn State. Like, I don't think we're there at that point. But, John, it has been an SEC-heavy Thursday on the Penn State beat. Transfer Thursday really has been upon us. You know, maybe this, because the more I think about this, I'm sure that has nothing to do with this, and no one cares when they announce things, although I do respect that Jalen Kimber, the cornerback, announced today, kept it between 9 to 5. I appreciate that. Penn State also picked up a commitment from A.J. Harris. Both of these guys formerly played at Georgia.
Did they pick up a commitment from A.J. Harris?
Well, we'll get into that in a second. They did. He didn't say anything, but they did. But John, is this all maybe a little reactionary to the fact that Emeka Egbuka announced, the Ohio State receiver, earlier today, that he's coming back? So maybe you
The announcement timing,
Yeah, yeah, maybe. I mean, I'm probably overthinking it, but I think it probably yes. Gives you a little bit better feel of saying, okay, Emeka Egbuka's back. Penn State fans will say, okay, well, we got two cornerbacks who are highly coveted high school prospects.
I think it should make Penn State fans feel better. Yeah, I think it should make Penn State fans feel better. You know, AJ Harris is really good. I think that's where that has to start. And I'll have next week, I'll have a story up actually on CenterDaily.com kind of analyzing the impact of all of these guys and what they can do at Penn State, but he is the one that, like, Kimber's good. He's more experienced, but I would much rather have Harris. I think he's going to come in right away and have a chance to start on the outside. Franklin always says that none of these guys are given starting spots, but I'd be pretty surprised if he doesn't start, you know, like it feels like he's going to step in right away. He's the same class as the freshman that we saw go through the trial by fire and the Ole Miss game and Zion Tracy and Elliott Washington II. So it's not like they're more experienced than he is. And so I think he's got a chance to come in right away and have an impact. And with Kimber, he's been a starter in the SEC. I would think he would also have a legitimate chance to start early. I don't know if either can play in the slot. That's what I'm going to spend a lot of this weekend figuring out.
Yeah.
Trying to see, you know what I mean, if how often they lined up there from what I can gather and all that stuff. But yeah, I think these two, and we'll get into Nolan Rucci as well, former five-star offensive tackle that they added. But these two, I think, are pretty important additions in a way that I probably wouldn't have said so before we knew Daquan Hardy also wasn't coming back, right? Because I think Cam Miller, I've said it on here before, is going to be a competent starting corner, at worst. And I think he's going to be better than that and has a chance to be the next kind of the guy at corner. That's very true for Harris, too, right? Like, he can be that kind of cornerback. And you know, if you have Kimber as a piece of the cornerback room who is – potentially starting, then I think that, like, your depth is suddenly really replenished in a way that I did not anticipate.
Yeah, this to me was kind of, you know, that cornerback room. I think we even talked about it last week, right? It's been loaded. You look at Joey Porter Jr., look at Kalen King, Johnny Dixon, right? Remember Dixon they had gotten from South Carolina, kind of a similar path that I'm sure they probably laid out to Jalen Kimber and AJ Harris and said, hey, look what we did with Johnny Dixon. I think that absolutely helps their case. But yeah, to me, that Peach Bowl performance in the secondary was a little eye-opening because it was like, hey, the secondary, if something doesn't happen here, it's going to take a step back. And that's not a knock against, you know, the younger guys in the room. It is just a room that got really young in a hurry. And that's something that I think Terry Smith clearly didn't feel comfortable with, nor should he. I mean, you think about it last year, right? You look at the talent that they have and they still went out and signed Storm Duck. Well, obviously that didn't really materialize for anything or much, but they have been content adding veteran guys to that room. And I think this might be a little bit of their recipe here of what they want to do and how they want to use the portal to continue to supplement the roster. But yeah, AJ Harris, former five-star cornerback. To me, the interesting thing is you say, okay, why leave Georgia, right? Well, the path to a starting job here is much more clear than it would be at Georgia. I was talking to my colleague at The Athletic, Seth Emerson, about it on Thursday. We have a story up kind of about the transfer and why it didn't work out. And one of the things that he was reporting was that Georgia had a little bit of intrigue in AJ Harris potentially playing safety. And that wasn't something he was overly thrilled with. So, you know, you say, okay, you've got a clear path here as a cornerback. I believe he is 6'1", if I'm recalling off the top of my head correctly. So you have that. But to me, the Jalen Kimber addition is interesting in a couple different ways. One, because he started his career at Georgia, then transferred to Florida. Then after this year, he spent the last 2 years at Florida, first 2 years at Georgia, which that first season was 2020, the COVID year. So the last 2 years at Florida, then he originally committed to Louisville December 30th. Now all of a sudden it's Penn State. So this guy's moved around a lot, transferred a lot. He has 2 years of eligibility remaining is what we've, I believe, determined. I think in his statement he said he has one, but.
Well, I think he said it's going to be his final year, which maybe implies something else. I don't know, but he has. So just to lay it out. 2020 was the COVID year. Doesn't count for anybody. 2021, he only played in one game.
Because he had an injury. Yeah, shoulder injury.
Yep, hurt his shoulder against UAB. Yeah. And 2022 played in, I think, 11 games at Florida. And then in 2023 started in 11 of 12 games for Florida. And so the last 2 years are the only 2 years he played. 1 year before that's redshirt. One is COVID eligibility. Therefore, he has two remaining. Now, he may like not want to just play a sixth year in college, and that might be the reason that he put that. Hopefully, we get a chance to talk to him and ask him at some point. Who knows? But yeah, I think he has 2 years left. Based on that tweet, it seems like he's planning on spending one.
Yeah, and the timeline, again, is interesting because the semester started this past Monday, right? So Penn State's in syllabus week. So if you were getting guys in here, and you and I talked about it last week, if you were getting guys in here for the winter and then therefore for the spring semester, because it's all one semester here, like they needed to be here. So this needed to happen. Yeah, so the AJ Harris thing was interesting because you said, is he here? Is he enrolled? Because he has not said himself, which again, in this era, players can do whatever they want. I don't care if they want to announce or not, but it is unusual in this day and age when a player does not come out with a Twitter statement, an Instagram statement saying, hey, here's where I'm transferring to. AJ Harris, as of recording this, has not said that. He has not said that, hey, I'm transferring to Penn State. I don't know why. Maybe he just felt like after going through his recruitment once as a high-profile prospect, he didn't need to do it again. I don't know. But then that's where you get into the conversation of names start appearing in the Penn State student directory, which is never the be-all, end-all. Right, I believe it was Devin Carter, the wide receiver whose name appeared there last year. Obviously, that
notably, Devin Carter, not at Penn State.
Mm-hmm. So it's never the kind of be-all, end-all, but that was interesting because I know Harris and Kimber, their names kind of appeared in there early on. But, you know, John, you and I talked about it before. James Franklin said that Penn State needed to speed up the process, speed up the admissions process, that things in athletics don't work on a similar track or timeline as things in academia do. So if they were going to get guys in here, they needed to do that. Remember, this is also, which I'm curious, we probably won't see anyone on this roster until at some point in February, but you have 16 early enrollees. Plus, we know Julian Fleming's here. We know Nolan Rucci's here. We'll get to that in a second. And then you add AJ Harris and Jalen Kimber. And it's going to be like, all right, I think they might have to start handing out name tags, maybe, John. I might need some practice with faces and names and numbers and trying to get everything in order.
That's going to be a lot of the next month, is making sure we've got names and faces and everything lined up. But Harris, you mentioned, you know, that he's in the directory. I was able to confirm it with a source, too, that he is enrolled and in classes. So he is at Penn State. He is in town. I don't know why there wasn't an announcement. You know, there hasn't been anything official from Penn State on any of the portal guys. Just, you know, very strange. But you mentioned Nolan Rucci, too. He is one of the more interesting ads, I think, this cycle, because you can kind of project what Fleming's going to be pretty quickly, right? Like the role he's going
to
step
can
into.
Can you
anyways.
Project that? Are you here to call him wide receiver one?
Yeah. I mean, I think he's the best receiver on the roster right away.
Well, let's,
I think
you opened the door, John, you opened the door. The other question that's out there, Keandre Lambert-Smith, speaking of people we haven't heard from.
Yes.
We don't know if he's here. If he plans to be here, we have not seen a statement. Again, classes started Monday, so either he's here or not, but unclear on that at the moment.
Yeah, and I think the assumption is that he's at Penn State. Like, I think he kind of has to be at the assumption at this point. Now has until, I think, Monday or Tuesday for late ad drop for registration, which is not a thing that I ever want to have to think about again.
Late drop. Well, I know late drops later, but I don't know when late drops my class, John, because they all want to be there.
I'm so sure of that. But I think late, like essentially the day that he would have to be registered by is like Tuesday or something like that.
Yeah.
And so that is after the draft deadline, I believe, right? Somewhere
draft
in
deadline
there.
Is Monday. Yes.
Yep. So, so it should be finality there one way or another. I think it's pretty clear which direction this is trending.
I don't know, John, if anything's ever clear in this sport.
That's true, but I do think we have a good sense of this, right? The transfer portal window for Penn State players is closed. Like, that is not an option. You know, these
but now there
guys
is,
that are...
There is the other window after spring ball, right? We can call it the storm duck window, maybe? That's the...
Yeah, that is the other thing that this doesn't just go for Keandre. It goes for every other guy on Penn State's roster. There is another window in April that opens up. I think it's the 15th or 16th, something like that.
Probably right after the Blue White game. Yeah, that's future.
I'll worry about that in April when that comes around. But yeah, so I mean, that's a possibility, but it seems like he will be here for spring ball. I'm not like, you know, breaking anything or anything like that. I'm not reporting anything. I'm just reading the tea leaves a little bit on that one. I think everyone pretty safely can at this point. Now watch it change by Monday, I'm sure, because I said this. But to go back to Rucci, like, I think he's coming into a situation where he will be competing for one of the tackle spots, right? He's got better size and length than Drew Shelton. Mm-hmm. And so that might make him a more ideal candidate for left tackle. But I think there's going to be a competition either way because Anthony Donko looked really good at right tackle in the Peach Bowl. And so, you know, we'll see what happens there. But I do think that at this point, it feels like Shelton is going to start. It's just a matter of which side. And then, you know, whether it's Rucci or Donka or whoever takes that job, I think it's going to be a competition, I guess, what I'm getting at. Like, I don't know that this is a situation. Like James says all the time, they don't tell guys they're guaranteed to start or anything like that. But I do think there's a more realistic chance that maybe Rucci at least isn't starting right away at Penn State. Who knows? Maybe he is. Maybe he comes in. He's an elite left tackle. But
I think, and he's, I believe, like 6'8", I think, if I'm recalling correctly.
6'8", 308, I believe. So like a little lean for a tackle still.
Yeah, 6'8". That's a massive human being. Yes. Yeah, I think you're right on the what happens with Drew Shelton piece, because to me that's the other kind of cause and effect here, right? And I think also with the Rucci addition, you have to keep in mind, I think probably what kind of sped this up was the fact that Wisconsin starting left tackle, who Rucci had backed up this year, announced that he was coming back for an extra season. So I think once that happened, if you're him, you say, okay, do I really want to sit another year before I get my chance to be the left tackle? So I think that's probably what kind of sparked this thing. So now you look at it, and I would love to know what Penn State's telling Drew Shelton, what Penn State told Nolan Rucci, because I know the way Phil Troutwine talked after the Peach Bowl, he had said, Drew Shelton is our future, right? Like, I remember that quote. I went back and listened to it. Now, you hit on it. We know Shelton can play left tackle and right tackle. He's said over time that he feels more comfortable on the left side. Maybe that's changed, maybe not. But I do kind of wonder what you do there, because here's someone who is came in, exceeded expectations freshman year, was able to help them out when Olu Fashanu got hurt, helped them out in a big way. And then this year plays a role, opportunity. So I don't know what they do there. To me, that makes spring ball really interesting because you've got, I think, two really intriguing left tackle options. And then you hit on it with Anthony Donka. And he was, to me, like the surprise of the Peach Bowl. Yes. Where it's like you look at this and you say, oh, okay, like this is absolutely an option. And remember, too, like Penn State also, the guys that they recruited and redshirted last year, the offensive linemen, like those are other guys that are going to be really intriguing for spring. But I think, John, what I am most happy about for Penn State fans, especially with the Rucci and the Fleming additions, is that they get to live out this long-standing what if of what if these guys would have picked Penn State? How could their careers maybe have gone differently? Well, wish no more. You're going to find out this year. And I think that's exciting. I think it's also really nice for those fan bases, right? The people at Warwick who were able to watch Nolan Rucci all throughout his career. Many of them Penn State fans who will make the drive a couple hours down the road. You look at the people at Southern Columbia that grew up idolizing Julian Fleming and watching him and what he meant to that school and that program and so many younger kids in that area. Much more realistic for these people to be able to get to Penn State to see their local stars play. So I think that's going to be really cool to see this year. But also, Penn State now with AJ Harris, Nolan Rucci, and Julian Fleming, three former five-star prospects coming out of high school. Now, again, we can argue the validity of the rankings at this point. The farther away you get from high school, the less relevant it is.
With Harris, I think it's still
important. Harris, yes, I'm with you. Harris, I think it really, really matters still.
Yeah, and I think Fleming will find out. Like, we don't know how much of that was injury, how much of that was, mm-hmm. you know, role and all of that stuff. But, yeah, I think there's been a lot of consternation about how Penn State has handled the transfer portal. I don't know that there were many ways that they could have handled this part of the cycle, at least this early part of the cycle, window, much better. Yeah, LaJonte Wester from FAU might have been the only guy that you point to, but he went to Colorado and they're going to air it out there, and he's probably going to get a bunch of catches, and you know, kind of is what it is. The same thing happened with Jimmy Horn from last year too, right? Who was USF and then was a Penn State target and then ultimately ends up at Colorado.
They could have used him.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think any kind of slot receiver, any guy like that, they could have added potentially. I also don't think it's the worst thing to wait it out. Their grad transfers can go in at any time. Like now Alabama players can go in over the next 30 days. Michigan players can still go in right now because it's the 5-day window after the national title game. But if Harbaugh leaves, those guys can go in. Whoever gets the Alabama job, those kids can go in for 30 days, right? Like this is going to reignite the portal to some extent too. So I do think like there's nothing wrong with waiting this out, and you get the main pieces now. And I think they've pretty much addressed every primary need. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. They've fended off any they've fended off any attempts to get their players to leave and go to other schools, which I mean is not even been hinted at. Pat Kraft said in his press conference that an agent was floating one of their own players' name to them at one point, which I still think is pretty funny. Like a really bad job by that agent, like a really, really bad job. But I do think like that is an underrated part of the portal window, is fending off other suitors and
keeping your own guys.
They were out there, right? Like that Penn State is a very talented roster and other teams want those guys. So I think that is a clear job well done by Penn State.
You know, John, it was like when I went to the Georgia Aquarium a few weeks ago during the bowl trip, I saw the sharks circling the water, you know,
the Sark. Like is that a hint?
No, not the Sarks, the Sharks.
Are you breaking news to us right now that Sark is going to be the Falcons head coach? Is that what that is?
No.
But Sark in Atlanta.
We've already, John and I have had our discussion about Dan Quinn and how he needs to take the Seattle job.
Yes.
And I think the perfect time for him to interview is Sunday at 4:25 p.m. So we'll see. We're not going to dive into your football sadness, John. This is not a therapeutic podcast just yet, but it's a long off season. It could be.
It will be at some point.
You mentioned that they handled the portal really well, and I think over time we've seen Penn State do a really nice job. We know that this is never going to be a roster like Ole Miss, where you're grabbing all these guys from the portal. There's a ton of turnover. They're always going to be built like a high school program, right? Not like a high school program, but they're going to be built by high school guys, right? They're 4-year guys, 5-year guys. That's what they want. And I think that's the better approach. I think that's the more sustainable approach. But obviously the temptations are always there to add guys who you think can help, as they should and they have. You'd like to see another wide receiver added. Now this is something I think that we're going to have to keep an eye on in the post spring ball era and that next window, because I still think you'd like to get someone. But then, as we saw last year with Dante Cephas, you get someone, but they're not here all spring. There might be that extended transition. Couple of the things I'm intrigued by this offseason as they are related to Penn State. Where does Dante Cephas end up at? I have no idea, but I think that'll be interesting. We did see transfer wide receiver Christian Driver, son of Donald Driver, ended up at Minnesota. He tweeted that earlier this week. So
we'll get to play Penn State this year.
Yes, I was going to say Penn State goes to Minnesota in 2024, so that'll be interesting. Maybe I'll get another chance to talk with Donald Driver again. That was probably the highlight of my year. For those listening, obviously know I'm a Packers, a bit of a super fan, I guess you could say, in that regard. So getting to talk with Donald Driver was a very, very cool moment for me this year. The other thing I'm intrigued by, which we haven't seen any answers to, and we might not, what happens to Mike Yurcich, right? The fired OC. Does he become an analyst somewhere? What role does he take on? I don't know, but those are kind of some other things that are swirling in my mind in the off season that never ends, right?
Yeah, I think Yurcich is an interesting one. I think that feels like an analyst hire somewhere, right? Like where he goes and somewhere and spends, maybe it's an off year or what have you. Or like as these coaching staffs get shifted around, maybe the cascading effect eventually gets to him, right? And he's an offensive coordinator somewhere again. You know, there's still movement on the coordinator front too, by the way. That has not ended by any means.
But not on Penn State's coordinator front, to be clear. Yes, Penn State has solidified that on both fronts. No more coordinator changes this offseason.
Man, you just keep leaving out Stacey Collins. It's both fronts. There's three fronts.
Yeah, true.
But no, I do think I do think that that is going to be one of the things that I follow. You mentioned Cephas. There's been connections. There's been reports that he visited Kansas State. I think that would make quite a bit of sense, which would be really interesting with Avery Johnson, their quarterback, who seems very good. And, you know, what that will look like for him next year. But, yeah, I think this is I don't know. This is going to be a lot of fun to follow. There is like this next, whatever it is, 48 hours, or if the Bama search drags out or whatever the next search is and however long it lasts. It just, like I said at the front end, it just never ends, right? Like this is,
you know, every time you constant. Say 48 hours on it, reminds me of like those crime shows where they're like, yeah, 48 hours to find the person. If we yes. don't, I'm like, yes. oh man.
If they don't find a coach in 48 hours, they have to hire back Mike Shula. Those are the rules.
Wow. What that, yeah, that's, I mean, tell you what the crazy thing, you look at the Saban coaching tree, and I was looking at a graphic earlier, absolute insanity. When you kind of look at that tree, and just, I think the other thing too, people are like, oh, he could have kept doing this. You and I have talked on here about this before. I know he's 72 years old, right? Yes. At some point, don't you just want to like not do anything or do less of what you're doing, right? Like
he spoke to Chris Lowe, and that's kind of what it seems like happened. He just, like, it was too much. Like he just didn't feel like he could put it all into it, which makes sense. Like, by the way, these last few days, we've only talked about Saban. Belichick today and the Patriots part ways. Pete Carroll yesterday was fired by the Seahawks, which I think was fairly surprising. I know I'm forgetting something or someone, but like this has been like a lot of turnover. We're some, like, I don't think people understand how like
the Bears fired their OC. That's probably front of your mind. Yeah,
that one wasn't. I don't think that one was it. But no, I think the Pete Carroll one. Like, I don't think. Maybe people just don't remember, or like he was awesome at USC. Like they were the Bama of their time, right? Like they were Bama before Bama this cycle, by the way. I know Bama was elite under Bear Bryant. I'm not saying that. But they were the top of the college football world for a bit, and you know, spends a decade and a half in Seattle doing a really good job there. Mm-hmm. And then kind of goes out with a whimper, right? Like it surprises everyone. I think that he got fired and that they moved on. So yeah, these things happen very quickly. I think more so in the NFL. You know, there's the human aspect of this that you hate to see people lose their jobs. That's why these retirements are so much easier to cover, because there's less. It's like, oh yeah, this is what he wanted. You know, it's more of the it's easier to discuss the job change happening and everything. But there's been a lot of movement. There's going to be more movement. Like I don't think we're done. I don't think we're going to be done at least for a week or two, right? Because of the cascading effect of this, and so. Whoever Bama hires will lead to another hire, will lead to another hire, will lead to another hire. If Michigan goes outside the program, that will lead to a hire, that will lead to another hire, that will lead to another hire. So there's going to be a ton of movement here in January that I am both looking forward to and hopefully not going to have to be involved in much from a work standpoint.
Yeah, I think we're in a good spot here. You mentioned Pete Carroll. I wanted to plug this story. This is like one of my all-time favorite stories to read, favorite pieces of sports journalism. If people are into reading long-form stories, which I hope you are, it's called 23 Reasons Why a Profile of Pete Carroll Does Not Appear in This Space. It was from LA Magazine back in 2007. Great, great story if you want to think about where Pete Carroll was at USC and kind of what an interesting figure. See, John's over there Googling the story.
I am. I have not.
It's
have not
an, heard oh, this. This is, I probably have read this story like 8 times in my life. It's that good. It's that interesting. Cannot plug this piece enough. It's just tremendous. But yeah, I think, you know, John, it also speaks to all these coaching changes. Like it feels like for us, like a very important, probably part of your childhood or young adulthood. It's kind of coming to a close with these coaches, right? I mean, we live in a
definitely
world.
Childhood still. Like I
yeah,
was
so probably childhood like, for you, yeah.
Yeah, because I grew up in the Belichick, like the real reign, yeah. Right? Like the aughts. And you know, Pete Carroll, he was at USC. I was like when he left, I think it was 12 or 13. With Saban, like he took over Alabama when I was 12. Like these were all the coaches that I grew up watching. So it is very strange to see, especially to see them all go out at kind of the same time.
Within a few days of each other. This is
yeah, within like 36 hours, everyone has decided to leave. But yeah, no, I think it is like the closing of a chapter for me specifically and like what my football exposure was as a child and, you know, all of that. So because like the Bush push and everything was top of mind for me as a child. Unfortunately, there was a Super Bowl that was at the top of mind for me as a child that ruined football for me for a couple years when I was 9 years old.
We don't need to talk about John Elway on this podcast, John. It's fine. Yeah. We're not going there.
That's fair. Pete Carroll didn't actively ruin anything for me, at least, which I appreciate.
Oh, he did for me. Yeah, on the it was more so the replacement refs, but he kind of went along with it. So I've always and the Packers meltdown in Seattle. Like, you want to talk about worst moments of my sporting fan lives? I'm very happy to see Pete Carroll go, quite frankly. Gonna come soon enough, right? I am very excited, John, to we'll get to watch hopefully the NFL this weekend like normal people. Very much looking forward to that. I'm not so sure if you're fandom the same way about Monday night.
Listen, I get the weekend. I'm very much looking forward to Saturday and Sunday. You better believe it. Monday, it'll be full-throated. Go Birds, but I know what's best for the future of the franchise, and we don't have to have that discussion right now.
Yeah, we, John and I, have had plenty of discussions in which I try to misguide or talk about his misguided Eagles fandom. None of them have seemed to work. But I think, is that all we have for that? I think that's all we have. Nobody else has portaled. No one's been hired or fired.
If you're watching on YouTube, you've seen me checking every Twitter notification I get out of fear during this episode, because every time something pops up, unfortunately for me, the only thing that happened was that A.J. Brown did not practice for the Eagles today. So we did not miss anything in the Penn State world or the college football world while we were doing this, which is fortunate, because it is going to be moving pretty quickly over here over the next few weeks. And frankly, we will probably be discussing it on some level, whether it impacts Penn State or not, because on some level, it all impacts Penn State when you get to this level of program. So Audrey and I will have you covered here on the Nittany Dispatch. If you'd like to read Audrey's writing, you can find it at The Athletic. If you'd like to read my writing, you can find it at centerdaily.com. Audrey on Twitter, of course, is oddsnyder4. I am John Sauber. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. Like I said, if you're on YouTube, hit the like and subscribe button down below. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star rating and review. That would be really helpful. Until next time, thank you for tuning in. Have a great day.